Coming up on this episode of Disneyland Weekly, one of the annual passes has gone off sale, more Legionnaires news,
two Star Wars related surprises this week, and more. Disneyland Weekly starts now.
This is Disneyland Weekly.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Disneyland Weekly, episode 8 for the week of November 22nd, 2017. I'm Teg Bushman.
And I'm Teresa Urban. We would like to thank those of you who have left a review or rating on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Also, a thank you to Kenny for leaving us a great review on iTunes and supporting us on Patreon. Kenny is also part of the Disneyland Gazette at DisneylandGazette.com. Now let's get to the news.
Attention, attention, please. Sala speaking. Please check your seat straps, making sure always they are securely fastened.
This Monday, Disneyland has once again stopped offering one of the annual passport options. The Southern California Annual Pass, which costs $469 a year, was discontinued for the foreseeable future. Michelle Himmelberg, a spokeswoman for Disneyland, says our annual passes are very popular with guests. We continuously seek the appropriate balance that helps manage demand for our product and allows us to deliver a world-class experience for all guests.
Yeah, I feel like the reason they stopped offering this, because I know you had asked a little bit earlier, I think the reason they stopped offering it was there are just too many annual pass holders, which causes problems for day visitors. We will talk about that in our discussion topic a little bit later. As we reported on last week, there have been more cases of Legionnaires' disease, along with an additional fatality. The number of cases has risen to 15, with 11 having visited Disneyland. If you went to the park since late August and have a fever of 105 or higher with muscle pain, cough, usually with blood, chest pain, chills, vomiting, diarrhea, headache, nausea, confusion, or other mental changes, you should see a doctor.
In more lighthearted news, this year, the Disney Parks Holiday Special will focus primarily on Disneyland and not Disney World like in years past. I hope that this is a sign of things to come. I feel like Disneyland should have more exposure than it has in recent years, especially in these holiday shows.
Along with all the stars in the parks for the holiday taping, someone special showed up for a ride with some lucky guests on Star Tours. Mark Hamill, who most of you will know as Luke Skywalker, surprised guests to promote Star Wars The Last Jedi. You can check out the video of the experience on the Star Wars Instagram page.
How lucky were those riders?
I know, it looked really cool.
In other Star Tours news, the new crate destination premiered in the attraction Friday. As an added surprise, Disney also added the planet that Star Wars Galaxy's Edge is set on, Batuu. It is nice to see the resort doing neat little bonuses like this.
In another welcome unexpected move, the garlands over Main Street have returned for this holiday season. This is the first time in the last couple years since the introduction of Paint the Night, which included floats that were too tall to make the clearances, so the decorations were left out. With Paint the Night going to California Adventure, they were free to return. There's a lot of push online for this to return, and now that it has, people are ecstatic.
This week, it was announced that Black Tap Craft Burgers and Beer will be replacing Ride Makers and Build-A-Bear. The new restaurant will serve award-winning burgers and signature Crazy Shake milkshakes. This location will also feature seating inside and out with a casual atmosphere.
Yeah, I was looking up some of the Crazy Shake milkshakes that they're going to have, and they look kind of interesting.
What are some of the Crazy Shake milkshakes you saw?
That's a good question. Now that you say that. Yeah, some of the ones I've seen online so far have been the Sweet and Salty, cookie and cotton candy flavors. If you go online and just do a search for Crazy Shake milkshakes, you'll find some of these pictures, and they're very crazy. It looks like almost like ice cream with like stuff stuck to it, but it's a milkshake. So I know that in one of the they even have a s'mores one that looks pretty crazy that I'm looking at right now. I know that Mice Chat, where I saw this first, had a picture of one and said that it looked like for millennials that these crazy shakes, if they don't get them to take Instagram pictures, they don't know what will. The Themed Entertainment Association honored Disney this week for its new and reimagined attractions. Pandora, the World of Avatar, received two awards for outstanding achievement. The first was Excellence as a Theme Park Area Development and Flight of Passage for Outstanding Attraction.
For attraction reimagining, Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout was honored. Rounding out the honors, Frozen Ever After was also recognized in the reimagining category. At the International Association of Amusement Parks and Attractions, known as IAAPA, Mickey's Most Merry Celebration stage show at the Magic Kingdom won Most Creative Christmas Show. Finally, the Rookery inside of the Wind Traders in Avatar Land won Judge's Choice for Games and Merchandise Excellence.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really surprised that Disney's winning some of these awards. They've always been known for everything. Also, I know that you properly did it. You said known as IAAPA, but people call it IAPA. So this week, in our discussion topic, we're going to talk about the annual pass holder problem, which people have been talking about online for quite a while. Obviously, Disney's news this week of getting rid of the Southern California annual pass kind of feeds into this. Basically, the background on this, if you aren't aware, is Disneyland, as opposed to Disney World and some of the other Disney parks around the world, is mostly annual pass holders and locals. So what happens is you get a lot of annual pass holder people that only come for part of the day, and it makes it really hard for day visitors, people that are buying just the either the park hopper tickets or single day tickets, that kind of thing, just being there for a couple days, maybe in their whole life, kind of makes it a bad experience for them because the parks are always so packed. And because the annual pass holder prices are so low, when taken into account, you know, how many per day or whatever, you know, the cost per day, the more days you go, the cheaper it is, the better value it is. I think that what's happening is people are just flocking there and there's just too much going on. So I don't know. I don't know what the solution is for the annual pass holder problem. I feel like maybe increasing the price of the annual pass is probably a good way to stave this off. I mean, if you increase your daily pass like they have to over $100 a ticket for an adult, but you have an annual pass that's like $300, why would you spend the money on a one-day pass? Why would you not buy an annual pass? And some of the annual passes are almost cheaper than the park hoppers if you add, you know, you do like 4 and 5 day tickets. What do you think?
Well, I think it makes sense. I see both sides of it. If I lived in the area, I would definitely be an annual pass holder. So I'd be part of the problem because I'd be one of those people that would try and be there whenever I had free time. So I would go there for part of a day or, you know, for a long weekend whenever I could. So I could see how that can be a problem because you're right. There's just more bodies in the park. We also already have the problem that the fast passes are creating with ride queues. So add in all of these extra people that are just kind of, well, just, I don't know, weekend visitors or whatever you want to call the annual pass holders. You have all those people on top of the issues that they're already having with ride queues. So I can see why that's a big problem. And it's not like this, the park's getting less popular. So it makes sense. I can see both places because I do think that the annual pass holder does have a place. I mean, you don't want to just completely discontinue those people because they do spend a lot of money at the resort. And I'm sure they're probably the ones that are more apt to go to the special shows and the special extra party ticket things that you have to purchase, like the Not So Scary Halloween party and the one that we were talking about last week, the date night themed one. I could see that being more geared towards the pass holders than just the general public. So I don't know. It's interesting.
Well, something that people don't think about is actually, so you kind of made a point. You said annual pass holders spend a lot more money there. I say in aggregate, they probably do spend more money over the course of a year than an average guest. However, a lot of annual pass holders do not eat in the park, and they don't buy a lot of the souvenirs necessarily right off the bat.
Well, and they're probably the people, they're not going to be buying souvenirs right in the park. They're going to be buying souvenirs in a different outlet because you can still get
the Disney outlet,
park-themed merchandise not at the park.
Yep, and, you know, these people take up space. You know, there's more and more, you know, the annual pass holder numbers have grown to over 1 million annual pass holders, which is a lot.
How many?
Over 1 million.
Wow.
Over 1 million annual pass holders. So, you know, it's hard. Annual pass holders, you know, they increase wait times. The other thing, too, is, you know, as an annual pass holder, if you go there a lot, you know all the ins and outs and how to get everywhere and how to do everything. And you know all the little tricks. The problem with that is it makes it bad for the day visitor. And objectively, I guess, you know, Disney probably looks at the day visitor. They're going to spend more in their time there. So they kind of, if you make that a bad experience for those people that are spending good money to come there, who are spending money like in the hotels and all, you know, all those add-on things for Disney, if you make it a bad situation for them, they're not going to want to come back and they're not going to keep spending their money. I mean, if I went there, if I was in a situation that I was only going to be able to go there once or twice, or it was like a huge deal for my family to go to Disneyland, and I went there, and there's annual pass holders and all the tricks, and I felt like all I am is standing in line all day. I don't ever, you know, I'm having trouble getting fast passes. You know, I'm going to eat different places, and it's busy. You know, there's all these things that I think that can that can cause problems. One of the other things that we kind of talked about was that they make shorter visits. So they show up at night after work. So it makes the evening stuff a lot harder because, you know, and you get the parking structures and whatnot filling up. You know, they come in on the weekends because they live down there. So they come in on the weekends, you know, and stuff like that. So it kind of doesn't make it, their guest flow doesn't quite work the way they want it to.
Well, and I could see how staffing could become hard to try and figure out. I mean, how do you know when to have staff there? If you're going to have, you know, is there going to be an influx of annual pass holders in on that day that maybe they don't think is going to be busy, and so suddenly they're more busy and they're not staffed appropriately at the restaurants or, you know, wherever. I wonder if that doesn't make a difference too. The other thing that I'm reading too is that annual pass holders are the ones that are filling up the parking lots, and they're the ones that are causing the parking issues, I guess would be a good way of saying it. And like we've kind of discussed previously, how Disneyland parks is kind of a little bit differently, but considering the volume of cars that they have to park in the period of time they have to park, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But they just kind of, they get you in. So you got, I guess with annual pass holders, if you're coming in the day and you're leaving halfway through the day, then you're leaving that spot empty. They don't necessarily know that your spots are empty. Right. They don't go back and refill that spot. Mm-hmm. They just assume that the lot is closed.
So I'm on mousemonthly.com, and there's an article they have called 5 Reasons Disneyland Doesn't Want More Annual Pass Holders.
That's funny because I'm exactly on that same website.
Nice. So there's 5 reasons they don't want them. So we kind of already talked about these. So annual pass holders fill up space. Number 2 is annual pass holders increase wait times. Annual pass holders make shorter visits. They fill up the parking lots. And finally, they often don't spend extra money, which we talked about. Now, there's a couple reasons they put here that
are good.
That are good. Mm-hmm. They provide guaranteed income.
That's
so
true.
You buy a pass, that's your money. It's already in your pocket. You know it's happening.
Well, and it'd be interesting to me if there would be a way to figure out. I feel like maybe it's kind of like all-you-can-eat buffets. You have the people that spend the money that get, I mean, they get their money's worth. And then you have the other people that, yes, they're still paying whatever. They're okay with paying the higher price because they want the convenience of it. And so maybe they're not actually getting their money's worth. So with this in terms of annual pass holders, how many annual pass holders are purchasing passes, but how many days are they actually, how much time and how many days are they actually spending in the park? Are they all there all the time, or is it just a group, you know, is it just a
I had an annual pass, something that we talked about a lot was we always got the premium annual pass. And like I've said in previous episodes, when I first got a premium annual pass, they were like $250 a year, which is like an
much
insane
more affordable
deal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But even now, I think, you know, when our attendance, we lived in Northern California, so we would go 3 or 4 times a year, maybe max, and we'd go at 5 days at a time. So that's 20 days over the course of the year. We determined, though, and this comes back to the point I was making earlier, which is they should increase the price of the annual passes, because I think what some people do is they say, okay, even at $1,000, okay, let's take $1,000. If we go 20 days out of the year paying $1,000, that's $50 a visit.
That's that's awesome.
Which is half the price of a day ticket.
That's less than half.
Right. So you got to kind of look at it that way. So that's how I looked at it.
Oh, yeah, it's a great deal for sure.
That's how I looked at it. But I think you're right with the buffet thing. I think there are people that buy the premium annual passes, and they go maybe 10 days out of the year. Mm-hmm. But I think there's those people, like some of the people that write for these blogs, some of these blogs and stuff, that go every day or every couple days. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people, they're not going to go the whole day.
Well, the other part, too, is if you're going every day, you're not going to be on all of the big ticket rides. You're not going to want to ride Space Mountain
every
day.
Well, that's part number two. They don't have to ride all the e-ticket attractions on every visit, which is good. I mean, for me, I'd like to just go people watch. I think we've talked about this in our discussion before.
Oh, I'd love to just spend the afternoon in the park just to be in the park. I wouldn't necessarily. If I was able to be there all the time, I wouldn't have to ride the rides all the time either.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you go, and you're absolutely right, you know, and this is the next point, which is if you're an annual pass holder, maybe you go to the value-add tickets for special events. You go because it's something different, because you don't get to do that all the time.
Right.
For me, I would love to go to one of the 24-hour days where it's open for 24, because I like at night. We talked about this. I'd love to spend a whole night in Disneyland. So I think there's all that stuff. I think that people go and they experience a lot. When you go often, I think you experience the park differently. There was a time for my birthday. I went for a week with my friends, and then I went a week with my family. And that second week with the family was so different because I'd gone on everything like a bunch of times. Mm-hmm. So it was so chill. It was like, let's go have breakfast and like not worry that we're taking a long time to eat breakfast. Let's go on Tom Sawyer Island and check out all the caves. Like stuff that you don't really, you know, let's go ride the canoes. Stuff we do that doesn't take up a lot of time or that takes up more time that usually you wouldn't do because you're
standing in line.
You're standing in line or you want to get on those big e-tickets. So the other one are annual pass holders are a good source of information. So again, this comes down to bloggers and stuff. You get lots of good information. It actually kind of keeps Disney on their toes, which I think, you know, because sometimes things, bloggers and stuff point stuff out and Disney fixes it, which I think it's good because sometimes I think they get blind to some of their stuff. The other thing too is a good source of information is I know when I was an annual pass holder, and even now if I go there, if I were to go there for like a week, if I hear somebody asking a question or like not sure about something, I'll just pipe in and tell them something. If they're like, if I hear somebody talking like, oh, I don't understand how does this fast pass work, or I don't know why I couldn't do this or do that, I'll say, oh, you know, it's this way or that way. And I kind of provide that information. So in a way, annual pass holders can be, not always are, but can be cast members almost for that. And annual pass holders can spend a lot of money in the park, which is interesting because, you know, sometimes they do spend a lot of money during their visits, but maybe they don't do it on the things that you think. For instance, a lot of annual pass holders have collectible pins. I have pins every time I go there. I buy pins. So you could do that over time. And so maybe per visit you're spending is less, but in aggregate, you spend more.
Sure. Well, and I would think that if I was an annual pass holder, I'd want to be going and checking out more of the restaurants because a lot of times I don't check restaurants out depending on how much time I have because would I rather be riding the rides or sitting and waiting for a table at, you know, whatever restaurant. So I wonder how many times that they go just, I would do that. I would go just to the park, enjoy an evening, kind of maybe like a date night, go check out a new restaurant that we hadn't checked out because I have the time to do so.
Right.
So I wonder how much they could be spending in, like I said, restaurants and stuff like that, just because they have the time to sit and enjoy it. And they're not worried about like somebody that's only there for a couple of days. You're going to do the counter service stuff because you just don't have time to sit down.
Or not even that, but you know, when I go for a few days, you know, I have my staples that I always want to hit. You know, it's not this way anymore and I'm very sad about it, but I always hit Riverbell Terrace for breakfast. Like that's something I have to hit. I hit Rancho Zacalo for, you know, dinner sometime. You know, I have these things that like before we leave, I have to have this.
Your little bucket list. Yep.
Yeah. And so if we're only there for a few days, we're just going to hit those things all the time. Whereas if I'm an annual pass holder, maybe I go to the Stage Door Cafe. You know, for the very first time, the last time I went to Disneyland, James and I went, for the very first time in all the times I've ever been to Disneyland, I ate at the Bengal Barbecue and it was amazing, but I had never eaten there.
Really?
Have you had it?
Yes, it's delicious.
Yeah, their skewers are great. We tried to make a skewer thing at home, but it was way too spicy, the thing we did. So, I don't know. I think
it's a great value. So, I would be very sad for the annual pass holders that are out there if they do end up getting away, you know, going away with it, getting rid of it, or doing something differently with it. But I mean, I guess business-wise, I could understand why maybe they're thinking that they need to pull back. Or
well, not even business-wise. Just think of the daily visitor.
Well, right. Yeah.
You just got to think, like, you know, it's hard for us to think of ourselves as daily visitors, I guess, but you know, because we look at it, I think, differently.
Yeah,
we think of Disneyland a little differently. The other thing, another blog makes a point on here that I think is important to talk about in this whole thing is they wouldn't even have this problem if all of their attractions that they would be building would be high capacity. So we hit the kind of golden age of high capacity when we had It's a Small World just gobbles people up. Haunted Mansion gobbles people up. Pirates gobbles people up. But you get the new attractions, you know, Mission Breakout doesn't really eat that many people. The Submarine Voyage, Finding Nemo, eats like hardly anybody an hour.
Right, yeah.
So I think what they need to do, even if you go to their new stuff, the newest thing, right? So let's go to Avatar Land. I know it's not Disneyland, but that's the latest thing. That does not have a high hourly capacity. They go in and it's like a four. Well, it's like Soarin' Over California. Like you go in and like it fills your thing and you're, and then there's 10 or so people or however many people they fill up and you're in front of a screen for that amount of time, as opposed to something like a Pirates or a It's a Small World or a Haunted Mansion where it's constantly cycling, like you're not stuck in one section.
What's the one that's on the river that has the awesome animatronic? Doesn't that
that's
one
the Navi
eat up
River
people?
Journey, but the boats are smaller.
Oh. And I guess through the videos that I've seen, because I have not been able to see it yet in person, it seems to me like a lot of the other rides, even if you're on a boat or, you know, a doom buggy or whatever, you can see that, you can see the person right in front of you, and you can see the people. I mean, they're right next to you, really. Mm-hmm. But you're kind of in your own little secluded area. Whereas in this river, what is it called again?
The Navi River.
Yeah, Journey. The Navi River Journey. In that video, you don't really see other people's ride vehicles. You're kind of, I mean, which is nice. It's a good experience. But yeah, I guess it wouldn't be eating people up as much, because there's just not as, I mean, if the boats are smaller, that's fine, but there's just not as many boats. Think of when you go to Pirates. Yes, that's a bigger boat, but you're also bumper to bumper with the yep. other ride vehicles while you're going through
the
ride.
But I don't really care. I'd rather just get on and...
You know what's interesting? I've never, it's never really bothered me, because I guess I've never noticed, because say, for instance, Splash Mountain, you're in your own little ride vehicle. Again, you're bumper to bumper, but you're still in your own ride vehicle, so you still feel like you're secluded, I guess, and you still feel like it's your own, you know, your own trip down the log plume. But yeah, I guess I've never thought of it before. But yeah, you kind of are crammed in there with a bunch of other people.
Okay, so I just pulled up three attractions for hourly capacity. Mm-hmm. So Splash Mountain, mm-hmm. 1,500 people an hour.
Wow.
Pirates of the Caribbean, 3,400 people an hour.
Wow.
Haunted Mansion, 2,400 people an hour. Big Thunder Mountain, 2,400 people an hour. Space Mountain, 2,000 people an hour, okay? Flight of Passage, 1,440 people per hour.
That's
they knew
crazy.
That was going to be yeah. a huge thing. Let me see if I can find the Navi River Journey here and see what that capacity is.
I feel
is.
Like that's got to be higher than Flight of Passage. Because you're right, Flight of Passage is like soaring. You go into a theater and then you got to wait.
I don't see, in just a quick search here, unlike the other ones that literally just popped it up, the River Journey doesn't give me an hourly capacity. It does say that its capacity is lower than Pirates. So, I mean,
which makes sense, because like I was saying, in those videos,
boats, and
smaller boats,
out.
And they're much more spread out. Mm-hmm. But I feel, I don't know, I have two-sided for me. I feel like that adds to the ride quality or the ride experience itself. Because if looking through those videos and looking through those areas, I don't think it would seem as magical and like otherworldly if I had somebody else's boat right in front of me. I was looking at the back of their heads the whole time. Because it's supposed to feel like you're discovering, you know, a new planet or a new area, so I you kind of need it spaced out.
Right. I'm trying to look up really quick here. I was curious.
I still though, man, that avatar, the avatar animatronic in that thing is just unreal. I need to see it in real life.
Yeah.
I'm gonna make them stop the boat just so I can sit there and watch it. I'm telling you though, I would
cool.
not want to be in that ride after dark, because I would be way too freaked out that thing was going to come and, like, I don't know, touch me or something. It's
oh,
just
like,
so
like
real
if it broke
like.
Down?
Yeah, it's just so real looking that I would just like have to keep looking at it, make sure it's not still moving, even if it's broken down.
Do you remember? I'm totally blanking on this. What is the attraction in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter?
Which one?
The one that's in Hogwarts.
Oh, Escape from Hogwarts?
Is that what it is? Escape from Hogwarts?
Forbidden Journey.
The Forbidden Journey. Okay.
Wow. Good thing we're not doing a Universal podcast.
Right. So let's see.
I feel like that one eats a lot of people up
yep.
there too.
Yep. So Forbidden Journey, which is good. It looks like, oh God, I just had it. I think it was 2,880.
Wow.
So it's four riders every 5 seconds.
Well, I was
going
to say, and that's only, and each ride vehicle is four riders.
Mm-hmm. And that's every 5 seconds. But that's, again, that's kind of like the Haunted Mansion where it's continuous mm-hmm. going. So what happens is they slow down when they get these attractions that are... But even, you know, you got Finding Nemo Submarine Voyage. That's kind of continuously going in a way. But that's
yeah, but
so
only
hard to get in and out.
Yeah, and there's only three vehicles, really, isn't there? I've only ever seen three submarines going.
There's more than that.
I know, but I've never seen them all looping around.
You know, that's a good point. What is the... I'm pulling this up now. Wikipedia. How many subs are there? So, first of all...
Ask Siri.
40 riders per vehicle. And then there are 8 submarines. But, I agree with you. I don't think that they're running all the time. Anyway, we've gotten way off track. anyway, so what do you guys think? Do you think that you know, the annual pass holder is a problem? Are you an annual pass holder? What do you think about changes? Do you have any ideas of things that might make this better for Disney, might make it worse? If you don't have an annual pass and you're just an average daily visitor, what's your experience like? Do you think annual pass holders help or hinder? So please give us contact us on Facebook or Twitter, or email us at feedback@DisneylandWeekly.com. And before we wrap up this week, we'd like to point out we have the highly anticipated Outtakes episode available if you're an annual pass holder level patron over at Patreon. You can access this by going to DisneylandWeekly.com/support and clicking on the play option for that post. Please let us know what you think of the Outtakes by sending us email at feedback@DisneylandWeekly.com.
That is all we have for you this week. We are entirely supported by the listeners and not advertisements. If you find value in the news, information, and discussion that we bring to you each week, please consider supporting us with just a dollar by going to our website at DisneylandWeekly.com/support to find out how.
And just remember, if you up it to $5 a month, you get that Outtakes episode, which I can tell you is pretty funny. I can tell you from this episode we've recorded tonight.
Embarrassing is what it is.
But from this episode we've recorded tonight, we're going to have some Outtakes in there as well. So you can help the podcast by leaving a review on iTunes, as that really helps get our podcast out there. If you want to keep up with the show, you can follow us on Facebook by searching for Disneyland Weekly, on Twitter at DL Weekly, or sending us an email at feedback@DisneylandWeekly.com.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Wake up to a delicious morning with your favorite McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, now just $2, only in the app. Choose from a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit, sausage McMuffin, or bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddles. Just $2, only in the app. That's a deal as irresistible as the sandwiches themselves. Plus, you'll save time by ordering ahead in the app. Offer valid one time per day from July 29th through September 1st at participating McDonald's. Must opt in to rewards.